What's up, Dadcast Nation? Hey, I'm so honored and excited to get into today's episode of the Dadcast Podcast. Our guest today is certainly a notable name in the movie and entertainment industry. He's an actor, producer, writer, and author. As an actor, he is a Daytime Emmy Award winner and an Independent Series Award winner. He has been nominated for a second Daytime Emmy, an Online Film and Television Association Award, and he's been twice nominated for a Soap Opera Digest Award. You've seen him in numerous movies and television shows, including the widely acclaimed series Cobra Kai and the worldwide movie Karate Kid 3, where he starred as the main antagonist, Mike Barnes. His independent series, Studio City, is a widely acclaimed hit, and you've also seen him on TV shows such as The Young and the Restless as Deacon Sharp and on General Hospital as A.J. Quatermain. His list of accomplishments go on and on. Most recently, he received a star on the Walk of Fame in Palm Springs, and he's authored two amazing books, The Way of the Cobra and Welcome to the Q-Mite. He's an advocate for anti-bullying and an ambassador for the organization Boo to Bullying. Dadcast Nation, help me welcome to the show the one and only Sean Kanan. Thank you, sir, for being here.
Oh, it's my honor. Thank you for having me.
We are certainly pleased that you've taken some time out of your schedule to talk with us and talk with our listeners. But we want to get right into it. I know your time is important. But I want to go right into something here. I want to talk about Sean Kanan, the man, before we get into Sean Kanan, the actor, the author, the writer, the producer. You're married, right?
I am. I'm going to be having my 11th anniversary this July, July 8th.
Oh, okay. Well, early congratulations to you and you and your wife. Much success moving forward for you guys. And do you have children as well?
So I have one child, and my wife has four. They're all adults. They're grown up. Mm-hmm. But we have kind of a Brady Bunch type family. Yeah. So, I always joke. I was never in the military or any kind of combat veteran. But raising four teenage girls, I think that it's about as close as you can get to it. You know, it ain't easy. You know,
right.
So I think that'll give you some kind of medal for making it through that.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Well, congratulations again to you guys on your upcoming anniversary. I think it's always important for our viewers, which happen to span 14 countries at this point, to understand a little bit behind the person. We see a public persona and we see you starring in movies and TV shows and all of the success that you've had, but sometimes they just want to see the real person. And so I want to thank you too publicly for just being reachable. I was so surprised when I reached out to you on Instagram and it was actually you that responded. So I really appreciate that.
My pleasure. It really is. You know, I think I'm kind of a what you see is what you get kind of guy. I'm a firm believer that one of the most important things in life is your character. And, I try to always uphold and maintain mine. And I think part of doing that is, you know, being an honest human being. I don't have one persona in public and then I'm a completely different human being outside the public eye. Maybe that's good, maybe that's bad, I don't know. But you know, I think one of the really great things about being in your 50s, if you've worked on yourself, which I've done a lot, is you get comfortable in your own skin. You know, you know your foibles and you know your flaws and your shortcomings and you know your strengths. And you learn to mitigate your shortcomings and enhance your strengths. And you learn to have those shortcomings and flaws. You learn to use them as a source of inspiration and motivation to become better rather than something that needs to be hidden. So that's something that I've kind of adopted and I carry it through in whatever I do.
It's a great quality to have, and I'm sure that that's well respected among your peers and among the public in general. So thank you for expressing that. And I'm going to talk a little more about that because I really enjoyed reading. I was up all night reading The Way of the Cobra. And
Excellent.
so I want to delve into that in just a little bit. Now, I read somewhere that you have an interest in autism awareness. Can you tell us anything about your connection to or your interest in autism?
Well, I was asked years ago to participate in an event. It was a charity event for autism, and that was kind of my first introduction into getting involved with that. And I've since then done other charitable events for different autism groups, Autism Radio Network. I try and I have a couple of pet charities. You mentioned one, which is Buddha Bowling, which is a 501c3. But I try to say yes to as much as I can say yes to. I don't specifically just work with one charity. If I'm able to do something, if I'm able to help, I try to say yes. It just so happens I've been asked multiple times from different autism charities to be involved, and I've been able to say yes, which has been something I'm very proud of and happy to help and give back to that.
That's great. It always piques my interest because my wife is a clinician who works with children with autism. And so we are in that population all the
Yeah.
time, and really appreciate your bringing some awareness and helping those organizations. And you mentioned Boo to Bullying. So what's your connection to the anti-bullying campaign?
As a young kid, I was bullied pretty severely, and it left a profound impact on me. Took a long time to heal from some of those scars, and I have always had a real strong disdain for bullies and bullying. And it's become a pandemic. It really has. Suicide is the fourth leading cause of death among adolescents. Bullying is a major contributor to that. And it's kind of ironic, I guess, that I played this, iconic bully, Mike Barnes. And I'll go into schools and speak to the kids. And before I do, I'll play that scene where Mike Barnes is terrifying Daniel LaRusso at the All Valley Tournament. And after it's over, I'll say to the kids, "Would you believe that that scary guy used to get bullied?" And they're, "No, no way." And of course, it happened when I was much younger. And it gives me, it opens a crack and lets some light in and allows me to connect with the kids. Because when there's an age gap, it's not always easy to connect with kids. And that gives me that temporary entree to try and, reach out and grab them and engage them in a dialogue. And it's been really effective. And you can frequently see the positive results in real time when I go to these events. And we get kids to come up on the stage that have been bullied, but we also get kids, it's so interesting, we get kids to come up who have done the bullying, which you would think that they wouldn't do that, and you realize so many times that it traces back to a situation that they've got in their home life. And it's also interesting that you see a lot of kids that are being bullied, when they're being really honest, they also say, "Yeah, there have been times that I've been a bully." And so when you sort of take it out of the darkness and into the light of day for a conversation, it's amazing to see kids that are bullied and kids that are bullies and kids that are on the sidelines watching the bullying happen all interact in a dialogue, and you can see in real time results that some of the kids that are bullying, have an epiphany and realize what they're doing is absolutely not acceptable. And other kids that are being bullied, they get this unbelievable uprising of support from the other kids. And at the end, sometimes you see all the kids gather around and hugging them, and it's very moving. And you know, I know for myself what a damaging effect bullying had on me for a very, very long time. And I just want to do everything I can to help eradicate it.
It's definitely great and much needed, because as you said so well, it's an issue across the board, across the country, across the globe.
It's so weird too, isn't it? Because I mean, bullying is really not something that happens when you're an adult. I mean, sure, okay, maybe it does sometimes, but you know, it's so socially ostracized and unacceptable. And especially if it's in a workplace, you know, somebody's going to go to HR and they're, you know, it doesn't happen as an adult, really. It's something that is very sociologically age specific for the most part. And you know, when you know, I'll tell kids sometimes, you know, you guys put stuff up on the internet and don't realize it's there forever. And you know, kids sometimes put incidents when they're bullying other kids up on the internet. And I'll say, you have to be insane to do that because someday your prospective employers are going to see that. And what do you think they're going to think? I mean, that's the first thing. And the second thing is, you know, on what planet do you think this behavior is going to be acceptable in proper civil society? You know, it's simply not acceptable. You're either going to wind up getting punched in the mouth, getting thrown in jail, or getting fired from your job, but it's not going to get tolerated. So it's important that you learn it right now.
Right. And I'm sure they take that very well. Just, if anybody, like most of American people around the world, are Cobra Kai and Karate Kid fans. And so I'm sure hearing that from you, means a lot and goes a long way. Something they'll probably be talking about, later in their life to their kids or something. So thank you for making yourself available for that campaign and just, being a good part of society that people can
I'm
relate
trying, man. I'm trying.
to. Hey, so let's get into the Hollywood part now, the Hollywood scene. What got you into acting?
You know, it's funny because this is an interesting nexus between my acting career and bullying. Of course, that's when the car alarm goes off. You know, as a young kid, when I was getting bullied, my refuge, my sanctuary and safe space was the movie theater. You know, it was dark. I could go and hide out in there. I could go and be alone with my thoughts. And it was there that I encountered my first mentors, whether it was, you know, Clint Eastwood as the outlaw, Josie Wales, teaching me about quiet, cool, or Rocky Balboa, teaching that, you know, even the lowest underdog, you know, can emerge victorious, or learning mindfulness from Obi-Wan Kenobi. And I think that that also planted the seeds for my love of film and my recognition of the absolute unbelievable power of film. You know, watching the flickering images on the 30-foot screen. And you know, when film is really good, it connects with us emotionally and it shows us the very best of who we can be. You know, how many times have you seen a film and you're just so motivated and connected to a character because they're going through something or overcoming a challenge, and you aspire to have the same sort of grit and intelligence and determination and fortitude that they have. And so it's kind of like it shines a light back on us, like a reflection from a mirror of who we can be. And so I think that's what stimulated my interest in becoming an actor. You know, I thought in the beginning I wanted to be an actor because I wanted to have a voice and I wanted to get out of my small town and see the horizons that were, you know, beyond the small town that I came from, and because I love to entertain people. But in reality, and in writing my books, and Way of the Cobra and Welcome to the Kumite are my third and fourth book, I realized that I got into acting because I truly love to inspire people, and that acting is only one conduit to being able to inspire people. I do it hopefully through my coaching, my motivational speaking, and my charitable work and my writing. So, you know, I guess the long-winded answer bringing it full circle is I thought I got into acting for one reason. And those reasons are all true, but they're all subordinate to the overriding reason, which is my true love of inspiring people to become the best that they can be.
That's great. I mean, the arts are so amazing. There's so many,
Oh, yeah.
so many sanctuaries that we can find within the arts. And I really hope, we can live in a world where those things never get taken out of our schools. We've got to fight to keep them there.
For sure. They're so important for kids growing up. They're important because, art stimulates conversation and art's provocative sometimes, and it's all sorts of things that I think not only depict beauty many times, but they also serve as a social commentary that facilitates a dialogue of questioning yourself and questioning the world around you. And I think that question everything. I think that's part of what being a critical thinker is.
Yeah, absolutely. That's profound, actually. Makes you just want to say, just
Does it make you
but
want to go up on the foot?
yeah, definitely. And reading your book
Yeah,
takes me
gotta read.
back to all of those things that you just mentioned. There's a lot of good information and a lot of nuggets that are applicable to our daily life in that book, which we're going to talk about here in just a minute. But the Karate Kid 3, now that role is iconic. I mean, when that trilogy of movies came out, it was spellbinding. I mean, people just fell in love with that series, that franchise. And here comes Mike Barnes, the antagonist, the bully, the guy that runs LaRusso crazy. And you get this role, as I'm looking back at your career and I was looking at the timeline, and as this role came about, some things happened in your life that really changed your life during that time period, some life-changing events. And I'd like you to tell us a little bit about that, because I think that's a pivotal point in your life.
Well, the entire experience was life-changing. I got the role from an open call, which means anybody who wants to can show up and try out. And, in retrospect, I think really it was more of a publicity stunt than anything. I don't think they really anticipated finding one of the lead actors for the third installment of a worldwide franchise in an open call. And so getting plucked out of relative obscurity by Jon Avildsen, who had won the Academy Award for Rocky and directed The Karate Kid and The Karate Kid 2. Truly amazing. And I'll take a little tangent for a second. I was doing an interview before Cobra Kai came out on the set of Bold and Beautiful. Entertainment Tonight was interviewing me. And I said, this is so surreal because 35 years ago, when I was at the audition for The Karate Kid 3, Entertainment Tonight interviewed me. And they said, well, we've got a really deep vault of things that have happened in Entertainment Tonight. We're going to find that clip. And so if you go to YouTube and you Google or you put in Sean Kane and Entertainment Tonight, you'll see the piece where I'm being interviewed by Entertainment Tonight. It was about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and you'll see them cut into it. There I am. I'm a 22-year-old kid, and you see the exact moment that Jon Avildsen comes up to me and plucks me out of this line. And then brings me inside the sound stage, and I do this interview for Entertainment Tonight. I do some martial arts, and we carry around these memories of seminal, important, profound moments in our life. But those memories become refracted through the prism of time and all sorts of other variables. And I had the amazing good luck to have that memory, recorded for posterity. And I was amazed that when I went back and watched it, because I hadn't seen it for 35 years, I hadn't seen that interview, how accurate my recollection of it was, because it was such a life-defining moment for me. So often in life, Success happens as a result of consistent, effective action over a long period of time. But there are times in life when you can take a quantum leap in your life in a nanosecond. You know what I mean? And that was one of those quote unquote nanoseconds in my life. You know, I met John Avildsen and I knew I had about 5 seconds to get this guy's attention. And if I could, it could potentially make all the difference in my life. And it has.
What's your name?
Sean Cannon. How are
Sean,
you?
I'm Jeff.
Okay.
Nice to meet you. Done any acting?
Yes, sir. I'm with Ambrosio Mortimer.
I've studied karate for about 5 years, and I've been in LA for about a year and a half acting. It's been going pretty well. And funny thing is, my head instructor did all the choreography for Karate Kid 1 and 2, Yumo Demura. And since I moved out here, this is something I've wanted to give a try. So I'm really excited to be here.
Going back to you were talking about some of the things that happened. So during the course of filming, yeah, you know, I've told the story many times, and I've recounted in my book Way of the Cobra. I had life-threatening surgery. I found myself in the very unenviable position on Christmas Day 1988 in Las Vegas, bleeding to death in the emergency room of Humana Sunrise Hospital. My leg had been bothering me, and I thought it was from all the karate I was doing. So I was taking a lot of aspirin, and in reality, I had sprung a leak. I had internal bleeding, and the aspirin, which is, of course, a blood thinner, exacerbated the bleeding. And I had lost a tremendous amount of blood. I passed out in one of the casinos, and they rushed me to the hospital, and they said, you know, we're gonna try and save your life. We don't know if we can save your life. And you know, shit got very real very quickly. And they said, well, we have to operate. And I thought, Monday? And they said, no, in 15 minutes. We're prepping the OR right now. And I woke up from the surgery, and I had a 15-inch wound on my abdomen. I had said to the surgeon before he put me under, I said, if you can, please don't resect. I said, please don't cut through the abdominal muscles. I said, resect them. Because I knew if he sliced through my abdominal muscles, I was going to be out of the film. No way to heal that quickly. And they didn't know it was wrong. So I knew they had to do massive exploratory surgery. And I think basically what they did, if I'm being kind of gross, but I think they probably took my intestines out and put them on a table. And they had to go, you know, millimeter by millimeter until they could find this tiny little hole that was leaking and then plug it up and put me back together again, right? And fortunately, he did not cut through my abdominal muscles. And so, of course, as soon as I came to, I was worried about my role. We were on a break for about 2 weeks, but you know, I had a significant fresh wound. I had lost 25 or 30 pounds in the course of 3 or 4 days, which sounds incredible, but and so John Avildsen called me up and basically laid it out for me. He was like, look, I need you back on set in like 10 days. And if you're not back, I'm gonna have to recast. And so I was really angry. I was pissed off. I thought this was completely unjust. I had worked so hard to get this role, and I thought it was unfair. And a funny thing happened after a few minutes. That anger went from being pity to becoming my why, to becoming the fuel that was going to propel the vehicle, me, to getting to the destination that I wanted to reach, which was finishing the film. And so the first day I could get out of my bed and I could walk to the bathroom in my room. And the next day I could walk around, you know, the hallway by the nurse's station. And the third day I could walk 3 or 4 times. And about 4 days later, with my staples in my stomach, I had them discharge me against medical advice. And I went and recouped for about 7 or 8 days. And then I came back and they put me with a guy who was a lineman for the Rams when the Rams were in Los Angeles back in the late 80s. And, you know, first day I could do 10 sit-ups and then 50 and then 100 and then, you know, a couple hundred. And I wound up doing all of my own martial arts stunts in the film, which you know, people always ask me, they say, what was the most important role you've ever had? And they always think it's Karate Kid 3. And there's a lot of reasons to think that. And it is Karate Kid 3, but it's not for the reasons people think. It's not because it's, you know, an international franchise. It's not because it was the first, you know, my big break. It was because when the chips were down and I was legitimately faced with death, at least at that moment in time, I was able to tap into a part of my character that at 22 years old, I didn't know existed. And I was able to, you know, summon up what I needed to summon up to be able to stay in the film. And so, you know, one of the things I talk about in my seminars and my books is the importance of story, how the stories that we attach to the events in our life significantly affect our destiny. And so many people formulate negative, disempowering stories to events that are difficult. And what that does is it perpetuates victimhood. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying people don't have bad beats in the moment, but right. The choice to continue associating yourself with that trauma as a victim is a choice. And, you know, I thought about this a lot, and I don't think I realized this at the time. This is sort of a realization that I've come to, you know, over the last couple of years, but I could have looked at that experience and attached the story that Hollywood is a mercenary place full of, you know, people that your only value is, you know, what you bring to the production. And if you don't have any, if you're not bringing any value to the production, then you're worthless. I could have come up with that. But instead, I came up with a story that, you know, when the chips were down and my back was against the wall, I did what had to be done to, you know, save myself and stay in the film. And that story empowers me. And when I'm having a really bad day, and believe me, I have them, I ask myself, well, was it as bad as bleeding to death on Christmas Day in 1988? And I say, no, of course not. And I go, well, then, you know, stop being a little, you know, crybaby and pull it together and, you know, get into the solution. And that story that I now have from that horrendous event that I wouldn't wish on anybody now has become a tremendous source of strength and empowerment for me. And as terrible as that event was, and I, again, wouldn't wish it on anybody, I don't think I would change it if I had to go through it again, knowingly, because it did something to me. I don't know, you know, we've all heard the old saying that, you know, steel is forged in the, you know, the fire of adversity. And that was definitely a moment of adversity for me.
Kind of sounds like your stumbling block became your stepping stone in the sense.
Absolutely. And you know what? You know, everybody has a story like that. It might not be as dramatic, you know, but I think everybody has a time in their life when things could have gone terribly wrong or unfortunately maybe did go terribly wrong. And one of the things I work on with my students, with my clients, is reframing how you look at the story that you attach to the event. And in many cases, I'm able to do it with people very quickly. And they're able to leave our sessions and have a complete paradigm shift in how they view the incident that happened to them. And they're now able to use it as a source of strength.
That's amazing. And that's a good segue into your book, because you write a lot about that in the way of the Cobra. You also mentioned in your book that there's something that you call emotional vampires. I'd like you to give a little bit of light, shed a little light on that for our listeners.
Well, you know, obstacles come in two forms. They come in the form of internal obstacles, and those are things like fear, and the stories that we tell ourselves and the inner critic and how we view our inner child. Those are internal obstacles. External obstacles are people, places, and things. Emotional vampires are, they have a sibling called Thieves of Time. And the right. Two of them are the Scylla and Charybdis. You know, I don't know. If people know the Scylla and Charybdis are, you know, one was this, it was in the Straits of Messina in Greek mythology. that the sailors would have to go by. And there was this terrible whirlpool of black swirling water. So you try and avoid that. But if you got too close to the other side, there was this thing called the Scylla, which was this like multi-headed dragon. So, you know, it wasn't, they worked in tandem and they were both bad. So, you know, thieves of time are things that rob us of our time, which is, of course, the most important commodity next to our health. You know, whether you're going down a 2-hour YouTube rabbit hole, or, you know, you're just, you know, what are the biggest thieves of time? Cigarette smoking. What does it take? The average cigarette is what, 2 minutes to smoke? And I don't know how many are in a pack, or the 30. So that's an hour a pack maybe. And if you smoke a pack a day, let's see, that's 28 hours a week, a month. It's basically 300 hours a year that you're doing something that is not only killing you, but is a complete waste of time. You know, and imagine what you could do with 300 hours, which, what does that come out to? That comes out to like 15 days or something. Yeah. So emotional vampires are people, and unfortunately, they tend to be people that we like. They tend to be our friends and our family. It's like, you know, when you make the mistake of your Aunt Tilly calls and you say, how you feeling? And she's like, my lumbago and my sciatica. Next thing you know, it's been 40 minutes of you listening to this, and it sucks the life force out of you. And it's not that you don't love her, and it's not that you don't want to be there, you know, as somebody that she can speak to, but it's not helping her. And so, you know, I when people do that to me, I stop them and I go, can you tell me one good thing that's going on in your life? Can you focus on one positive thing and let me hear that? Because that's what I want to hear about. Other than that, if you've got something bad going on, I want to hear about it, but I want to get into the solution and help you. I don't want to just perpetuate, you know, this misery that you're going through and that you're now inflicting on me. So you have to be very careful of people that are thieves of time, because, you know, we have a finite amount of energy and we have a finite amount of time in our life. And if you're not careful, there are all sorts of forces in the universe and in day-to-day life that will rob you of your life force and your time.
Yeah. Yeah. Emotional vampires, bloodsuckers.
Yes.
That was really good. That was a good part of your book. You went on to talk about gaslighting as well.
Yeah.
And how does that factor in, or what? Many people may not even realize what gaslighting is.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
So I wrote a chapter in the book which is about situational awareness, about being aware of your surroundings, and I apply it to, you know, whether you're you know, in a bar or riding a bus or, you know, all sorts of situations where you could potentially face danger. But I also talk about the ability to identify potentially dangerous people that are either sociopaths, God forbid you cross a psychopath, or someone who's a malignant narcissist. And gaslighting is a tool that generally narcissists and all three of them use, where they try to undermine your sense of credibility with other people, or they try and undermine, even worse, your sense of credibility with yourself. You know, an example is, you know, they'll say something really nasty to you, and then you'll have a reaction, and they'll say, can't you take a joke? Or I was just kidding. Mm-hmm. Or you're too sensitive. Or they'll say to somebody else, one of your coworkers, my God, he's so sensitive all the time. I mean, you know, ooh, you got to walk on eggshells. When in reality, you've got a legitimate grievance for being offended for what they said, but they try and make it look like, you know, you're the one with the issue. And it's important to be able to recognize these people. And I think I give some pretty effective strategies how to deal with them. And, you know, I mentioned psychopaths for a minute. And, you know, we all have this idea in our head of a psychopath, like Hannibal Lecter. Not true. 4% of all CEOs have psychopathy. Mm-hmm. Not all psychopaths are violent. Not all psychopaths are incarcerated. But what it does mean to be a psychopath is to have an absolute inability to feel compassion and empathy for other people. They have a different brain structure than we have, different brain chemistry. And it's believed that psychopathy is hereditary. And it's believed that sociopathy is, you know, comes from circumstances and upbringing. You may have crossed, you undoubtedly you've crossed sociopaths. That's without a doubt. But right. You very likely at some point or another have engaged with someone who's a psychopath and didn't know it. And, you know, when it comes to dealing with them, especially if they're your boss, it's a really terrible situation. And I give a couple of really good strategies how to deal with them. There are a few strategies how to deal with them. I know I got kind of off on a tangent there. I'm kind of as a layman, non-professional psychologist, because psychology fascinates me both as an actor and as, you know, a speaker and an author. I find psychopathy and sociopathy just fascinating. So right. I could go off on that for days.
Yeah, no, that's good information. I think that our viewers and listeners, if they will get a copy of your book, they'll be like me and stay up all night reading it.
Let me tell you how to get it. If you want to get an autographed, personalized copy, please go to wayofthecobra.com. If you just want to get the book, you can get it on Amazon or Kindle. And the sequel, The Way of the Cobra, which is Welcome to the Kumite, is only available at wayofthecobra.com.
Excellent. We'll definitely have that information available for our viewers and listeners. One other part in your book that I thought was really fascinating, and something that I find myself doing, which I found a lot of what you have in your book are things that I do on a daily basis. And you talk about that because you talk about the way of the cobra and being a cobra. You may be a cobra at some point, or you may be a person who hasn't become that yet. But if you seize the morning, there's a lot of advantage to that.
Absolutely.
Talk a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
Sure. So first of all, COBRA is an acronym that I developed. It comes from the words character, optimization, balance, respect, and abundance. So what's a COBRA? A COBRA is somebody that is living their best, most effective, most empowered life. A cobra's a badass, and everybody has a badass inside of them. You may have not discovered it yet. It may have gotten lost and moved to the side, but everybody's got one. The morning. So we've all heard the saying, carpe diem, which means seize the day. Mm-hmm. So I like the saying carpe mane, which means seize, dominate the morning. One of the most effective strategies to becoming successful in life is getting up early in the morning. If you can get up 90 minutes before you normally do, and if you can start doing a couple simple things, you will change your life. I promise you, and you'll change your life in 30 days. You'll see an appreciable difference. First thing I do is I get on my knees in the morning. I thank my creator. I'm living in gratitude. It's not a theological conversation. If you are an atheist, you thank the universe, whatever it is. What that does is it roots you in the present. You are thinking about things that you have and that you're grateful for, which puts you into a state of abundance, living in abundance. You know, people get anxious because they project a future that is yet untold. People get depressed and remorseful and unhappy often because they reflect upon things that have happened in the past that you can't change. So when you stay rooted in the present, you're rooted in gratitude, you're living in abundance, and the law of abundance, it's like the law of attraction. You know, when you live in abundance, the universe thinks you want more of it, and it gives you more of it. You know, only with magnets do opposites attract. Likes attract. You know, if you are vibrating at a high level, like a cobra, the universe is going to match your vibration. It's going to give you more happiness, more love. But if you're a guy that's broke and all you do is walk around and go, you know what? I'm broke all the time. I can't pay my bills. My boss sucks. The system's rigged against me. The universe thinks that you're happy like that. It wants to give you more of it. Okay. So anyway, back to the morning. So I start in gratitude. Next thing, And I don't do all of these every day other than the gratitude, but I do them a lot. I do some meditation. Everyone gets so intimidated by that. Just sit and concentrate on your breath for 3 minutes. Shut out that internal monkey chatter that we all have that goes on between our ears, that inner monologue, that negative critic. Get all that crap out of your head. It clears you for the day. You know, I'll do some visualization. You know, I'll think about, you know, what my day is going to look like, you know, how I want it to go. I envision myself succeeding at the different things that I'm going to be doing. Look, no plan survives first contact with the enemy. It's like Mike Tyson says, everyone's got a plan till they get punched in the mouth. Of course, your day's not going to go exactly the way you hope. But if you visualize it, you've got a much better chance of it happening. The next thing, read. Reading is the great equalizer. It doesn't matter if you are poor. It doesn't matter if you're incarcerated. Everybody has the ability to read the thoughts of great men and women throughout history, to travel to places they've never seen. And if you just read 15 pages a day, that's almost 5,000 pages plus a year. Imagine what you could put into your brain with 5,000 pages. Imagine what you could learn. And so I'm a huge proponent of reading. You know, those are just a couple of the things that I do. But if you can do those things and then structure your day, you know, I have a whole thing that I call the 100-minute makeover. You know, people get so overwhelmed by how many things they have to do that a lot of times they won't even start a project if they can't finish it. So what I do is I teach you how to multitask effectively. Productivity experts are going to tell you that multitasking is bad. I say that they're idiots. They just don't know how to do it right. I pick five things that I want to accomplish for the day. I will work on one of them for 20 minutes using Alexa or Siri or an egg timer. And when that 20 minutes is up, it's like when you were a kid and take the SAT, drop your pencil, you're done, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't expect to finish it. It alleviates the burden of having to finish it. But I know that I'll put 20 minutes into it. Then I'll go take a break. Then I'll go to my second 20-minute group until I've knocked all five out. Over the course of one day, you'll put 100 minutes of uninterrupted, non-distracted work into five different projects. Now multiply that by five, Monday through Friday. You've now put 100 minutes into five different projects. And assuming these aren't projects that are, you know, four-alarm fires or things with an absolute deadline, you're going to skyrocket your productivity. And if you, you know, and I usually knock out two of my 20 minute blocks, you know, before 9 a.m.
Yeah, those are good things. I was doing one of your exercises last night where it was, you know, breathing in for 4 seconds and then breathing out for 4 seconds. Yeah. Yeah. And it definitely, I was amazed that it actually made me feel calmer. I mean, I was having a good day, but it just, yeah, I could feel my heart rate slow down.
Yeah.
You know, there's a physiological.
You know, you could also take that and use that. Like, you know, if you're struggling with food, for instance, you know, the reason people overeat, there's a lot of reasons, but, you know, we get into a state. You know what I mean? Have you ever been like you're eating and you know you're full and you kind of can't stop? And then you start eating something else and you're like, I just can't stop. Well, the reason is that you're in a state and you need to change your state to get out of it. And ways to change your state are, you know, throw on some crazy music, you know, go take a walk, go even and get some fresh air. But meditating, the box breathing that you were doing, is an incredible way to change your state. So if you identify that you're in a state that you don't want to be in and you do something to change that state, it disrupts the state. A lot of times it shifts from using your prefrontal cortex to using a different part of your brain. You're able to switch out of that state and you're able to stop the behavior that you want to stop. It's a great thing to do when you're angry, you know, when you lose your patience. So
No, those are great, great things. And, you know, wayofthecobra.com. Folks, you got to go and you got to get this book and check out some of his other books. He's got a cookbook out there. I mean, there's a lot of things that you can get on the wayofthecobra.com, but you need to order this book. Get an autographed copy if you want one. and definitely practice the principles that you find in here. And I don't want to take too much of your time, but I just want to say, you know, there are a lot of people who watch these episodes and listen to them on different platforms who think when they see a Hollywood star as yourself that, man, they've got it all together. You know, they're living life great and, you know, the best life imaginable. If I could only be like Sean Kanan, you know, everything would be fine. What advice do you have to the person who is watching or listening to this broadcast and they're dealing with real life challenges?
First of all, everybody deals with challenges. Believe me, I have difficult days. I have things I'm dealing with in my life that are difficult, but I do believe it's possible to be a meaningfully happy person and be engaged in a period of time where things are unpleasant, but you're still a happy person. And that comes from balance, okay? What advice do I have for people that are engaged in challenges right now? You know, it's difficult. It depends on what the challenges are. I'm a huge proponent of taking action. You know, do something. Even if you're going to go take a walk, do something. You know, do something positive. Things can be overwhelming. And, you know, the Navy SEALs have a saying, how do you eat a 2,000-pound elephant? You do it one bite at a time. You know, shrink things down. You know, something that looks like an insurmountable problem, when you come up with a way to break it down into micro goals and micro actions, and you just start knocking them out, before you know it, you're able to achieve the overall goal. I think another thing too is, you know, to realize that with most things, there's always a silver lining, and with most things, you know, this too shall pass. Even things that are difficult and horrendous. You know, I think a lot of it is how you choose to look at it. You know, I'll just kind of close out with this because I'm going to have to go through this. But there was a book written by a gentleman named Viktor Frankl. And it's called Man's Search for Meaning. And Viktor Frankl was a very successful neurologist in Germany in the late 30s. And he had the ungodly experience of going to a Nazi concentration camp. And as he watched people around him die, he got in touch with a why, which was, I'm going to survive this so that I can bear witness to these atrocities to the rest of the world. And that became his why, which fueled him to survive. And so even in the midst of something really horrendous, if you can find a way to reconfigure it and to frame it in a way that gives it meaning rather than is simply something that's painful and a burden, you most likely are going to have a better chance of overcoming that challenge.
Excellent. Well, folks, remember to check out his website, wearthecobra.com. Follow him on socials. You can find him on Instagram at Sean.Kanan. You can also follow his official fan page, Sean Kanan, on Facebook. And also remember to show us some love by clicking the like button, share this episode, and just go on Instagram and follow him. You're going to see a lot of amazing things. You're going to get some motivation to do some great things in your life. Sean, we want to thank you again. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Absolutely. I hope we have the opportunity to meet in person sometime. I'd love to shake your hand and get to know you personally.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you again, Dadcast Nation. We're going to go ahead and settle and sign off for now. God bless you all. We'll talk to you again soon.
Take care.